Hoops, welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K26 with myself, Mo Mootsy. Alongside me as always, the legendary coach, Brendan Sir. Coach, how you doing?
Doing good, man. I'll tell you what, two amazing games tonight.
And two amazing games last night, too. How about that? The NBA play-in, a resounding success. It's amazing how much more entertaining the games are when there's something on the line.
You know, I mean, you know, when this started a few years ago, half of the people were against it, half for it. You know, I loved it from the get-go, as you did. And you know, all this BS that's been going on this year about the tanking, this is why this is important, because for the teams that are competing, you get teams that are fighting their tail off to get into the playoffs. I love it.
Like Steph Curry came back with five games to go in the season, returning early from injury. He was supposed to be on a minutes restriction tonight. Let's start with the game that just finished. The Warriors versus the Clippers. Against all odds, the Warriors, who were down double digits in the fourth, came back to win 126-121. And I know what you're thinking. If you didn't see the game, you're thinking, oh, Steph Curry probably went crazy in the fourth quarter. He played very well. He had 35 points on 7 of 12 shooting from downtown. But in the fourth quarter, Uncle Al Horford went three threes in a row to turn this game on its head. Yep. The other factor in the fourth quarter, Kawhi Leonard, who was basically non-existent because Draymond Green put that man in jail. You can say what you want about Draymond Green, but there's no denying he's one of the best defenders to ever play the sport.
Two huge steals down the stretch. Their team defense was unbelievably effective against Kawhi. The only basket he got was in the last few seconds on an uncontested layup. But I'll tell you what, I just love when you see older professionals competing so hard to win. And if you watch the game and watch the reaction, you would have thought they just won the finals.
Mm-hmm. Everyone laughed at Pat Bev when he won a playing game and jumped on a table, but you see how much it means to these players.
Yeah.
For the chance to get to the postseason. Absolutely devastating for the Clippers, who have been one of the best teams in the NBA since about Thanksgiving or Christmas. And you just think, if they didn't start the season 6-21 or whatever horrible record they had to begin the year before Chris Paul left, they would not even be in the play-in, let alone packing their bags to go to Cancun and giving their draft pick to the OKC Thunder. This is a horrible outcome to the season for them. I don't know anyone, Coach, and anyone I spoke to this week who picked the Warriors to win this game. I don't know anyone who picked the Warriors to win this. Porzingis gave them 20 points as well. Pajemski gave them 17. But Draymond's defense and Al Horford giving you 14 off the bench, it's like they turned back the clock for one night.
Yeah, and Steph, 8 in the first half, 27 in the second half. You know, the only word you can say, they lost 7 of their last 8 games, the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And as Steve Kerr said before the game, I'm hoping our experience carries us.
Yep.
And he was right.
Because they had no momentum.
Yeah. And so give them that. You know, it was great. And, you know, and I was thinking about, you know, there's so much talk about Steve, you know, whether he's going to continue coaching, his contract's up. But I watched him, and I've been there, the joy of winning a game you don't expect to win. It's like a life support system.
Yeah, you say, we run this back.
Yeah, it gets you. I mean, it just, what gets you to the next game, right? You know, and it gets you, and fantastic for them.
Yeah, the Clippers had 6 guys scoring double figures. Mathurin with 23 off the bench to lead them. Darius Garland fouled out ultimately at the end of the game. He had 21, 8, and 5.
Now, reality will set in. Mm-hmm. They're going to Phoenix, Golden State. And you know, they have to win that game to get in to get the A spot.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Phoenix.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Phoenix Suns, because they lost as the 7th seed against the 8th seed Portland Trailblazers, 114-110. Now, that was an interesting game. I was calling it on Prime. The Phoenix Suns scored 9 threes in the entire game. There was a lid on the basket up until the final 2 minutes of the first half, when they finally got a couple threes to go. But their shooting to begin that game was horrendous. And when you end up losing by just 4 points and the other team has scored 17 out of 47 threes and you go 9 of 25, that's a sad way to go out. And no Grayson Allen for them was a big miss. They missed the floor spacing and the three-point shooting that he offers.
And I believe they missed 9 free throws, and Devin Booker missed 5 of them, I believe. It's really a two-point game. They scored a basket with a second to go on a breakaway layup. But, amazing win. I'm happy for Portland. They've battled their whole year under tremendous adversity to go where they're going. So, to make the playoffs is an unbelievable thing.
Yeah, interim coach Chalmers Blair has been fantastic for them. Denny led the way before he won. But I want to talk about someone who, he didn't fill up the stat sheet, but this is a player who was a high pick in the draft and was maybe unfairly given the bust term around him. I think he had some sort of eye issue when he came into the league, and that man is Scoot Henderson. Because the level of defense that Scoot Henderson has played this season has been far beyond what I thought he would be playing. In fact, if we go back to last summer, he actually opted, when Jrue Holiday got traded to Portland, he did all his summer workouts with Jrue Holiday, working with Jrue's trainers and Jrue's team. And he's really learned from having the veteran Jrue Holiday on the roster. Jrue, by the way, dropped 21 in that game, and he was leading in scoring for the first half of that game. Yeah. Jrue was fantastic. Scoot Henderson was fantastic. And the thing with Portland is what happened down the stretch of this game is both teams went small, so there was no centers on the floor. But Portland just have 5 guys who are good defenders that can guard. And that way, when Phoenix was trying to hunt switches, there's no one to switch onto. Like, okay, cool. You're being guarded by Jrue Holiday. Your teammate sets a screen. Now you're being guarded by Tumani Kamara.
Who might be one of the 5 best defenders.
Got worse. It's tough. And they got Tybalt coming off the bench, and then Rob Williams and Donovan Klingon protecting the paint. Jeremy Grant returned. I think last night, or 2 nights ago when you listened to this, was the first time all season that, aside from Dame Lillard, Portland had a fully healthy roster. Yeah.
And Scoot Henderson, who coming into the draft, did he come in Wimby's year, I believe?
Second to Wemby.
I'm saying the same year, same draft.
Yeah, second pick.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So when he came in, everyone was raving about him. And then this year in a preseason workout.
Brandon Miller was second.
Preseason workout, he tears his hamstring. A brutal injury, and basically missed 2/3 to almost 3/4 of the season. And, and has set the kid back so much. But he's got a great body. He's got to learn the position, how to really be a point guard. He's just he's a great athlete. Great athlete. And so, but their future's incredibly bright as an organization, I think. So, but that was a great win for them.
Yeah,
Phoenix,
so Portland
is going to pose a big problem, I think, to Golden State.
Yeah, Portland move on to play the Spurs, the number 2 and number 7 matchup. And the Golden State Warriors travel to Phoenix to face the Suns to see who will be the 8th seed taking on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Who have you got in that game then, Coach?
I got Phoenix.
Why?
I think tremendous emotional win tonight. They're an older team, much older team. And I think home court and a must-win game, I think, will play into Phoenix's favor. I think, they played well a lot of the game last night, and they blew a big lead in the fourth quarter. I think they're, even though they've overachieved all year, I like a lot of people on their team, and I just think they'll win. Nothing against Golden State.
Book got into some foul trouble, so his rhythm was a little bit off because his minutes were all kind of messed up.
I like them. I think they deserve to move on. They've had a really good year. Jordan Knott's done a really great job as a first-year head coach. And I think, when they get to Phoenix and they get to walk around tomorrow and they think about it, they say, oh, God, if we win this game, guess what? We get to play Oklahoma City. Oh, boy.
That's
a hard one.
Steph and Draymond are going to be thinking, though.
Oh, trust me. They might not be to start the game, but they will be when the game's going on. trust me, I've had teams like that, and it's nothing fun going up against the world champs.
Well, the Eastern Conference side of the play-in, We got our first winner, the Philadelphia 76ers, defeating the Orlando Magic 109-97. Tyrese Maxey with 31 points, Vijay Adichie with 19, Kelly Oubre with 19, Paul George with 16, and Andre Drummond, who hit a pair of three-pointers for 14 points off the bench. Anytime I see Andre Drummond hitting three-pointers, I'm like, yeah, the game's done. If Andre Drummond's hitting his threes, the Sixers are going to win.
No, they. I told you I like them at home, and I think, I like Orlando. I like
Orlando's half court offense is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, it is absolutely horrible. Paolo Banchero has not made the leap that I think a lot of people expected him to make this season. I know injuries have been a factor, but injuries are a factor for every team in the NBA. When Orlando get into that half court, it might be one of the worst half court offenses in the entire NBA.
Yeah. They switched to a new style of the quote-unquote five-out offense, and I don't think it fits their team. I really don't. And I don't know how bad Franz Wagner got hurt in the last minute of the game. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
They said it was a knee injury, but he's been so injury-prone this year. If he does not play, it doesn't bode well. If he's okay and it was just he banged knees with someone, I like them at home. I do.
Really?
I do like them at home.
So they traded all those first round picks for Desmond Bain to bring them some 3-point shooting. And Desmond Bain has held up his end of the deal.
Yes,
because tonight he was 4 of 6 from three. The only problem is Franz Wagner, 0 of 2. Paolo Banchero, 0 of 5. Wendell Carr Jr., 0 of 2. Jalen Suggs, 1 of 6. Jamal Cain, 1 of 2. Tristan Da Silva didn't take any. Goga Bitsade didn't take any. And Anthony Black was 1 of 4. Okay. When you score 7 3-pointers in an NBA game in 2026, you're just not going to win.
Yeah, and that's my big thing about the NBA is right now, just because everyone in the league shooting them doesn't mean you should. They have never been a good 3-point shooting team. As you mentioned, that's why they got Bane. They should be pounding that ball inside. They should be a cutting team. They should be moving without the ball. They should be a pick and roll team. But they need to, and Banchero should be around the basket. I thought he was a really good player around the basket, early in his career. Now he's out on the perimeter all the time. I just don't like him out there as much.
And the 6 turnovers as well, nasty work for Paolo. But they stay alive because they were the 8 seed, where they are going to go on and face the Charlotte Hornets, who won an overtime thriller the other night against the Miami Heat. Now, before we talk about that game, Coach, a lot of controversy around LaMelo Ball allegedly intentionally tripping Bam Adebayo.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
Yeah, no, it was a bad play, obviously upgraded to a flagrant 2 today. And not that that can do anything about it. And it was a play that the league missed on that. The referee right in front of him, Curtis Blair, missed it. He should have been ejected on the play. That's what happens with a flagrant 2. You're ejected, and that makes a huge difference in the game. Yeah, you can't trip a player. You can't. LaMelo's not a dirty player, but the play he made was a dirty play. You can't grab someone, you can't trip someone. And the player got severely injured because of it and didn't return. So that compounds it.
You lose by 1 in overtime, and you think if you had your best player out there on the floor, you might not have had your season ended. Yeah. The thing is, that's interesting, is I saw a clip from earlier this season where LaMelo Ball is on the floor and he tries to grab Adebayo's leg.
Is that right?
Yeah, and maybe it's a weird coincidence. It's also a weird coincidence Bam gets injured on the 83rd game of the season for the Miami Heat. Mr. 83 himself.
Oh, no, I knew you were coming with something. Oh, boy.
Yeah, you got to get used to the bullshit. Come on now.
But Asher Wilson got a $5 million contract, so all's good in the house.
Yeah, I mean, the best player maybe the WNBA has ever seen has the same, less of a contract than a rookie, a 19-year-old player will get in the NBA. That is quite something. But the Charlotte Hornets.
That's a 3-year contract, by the way, $5
million. Wow.
It's $1.4 million a year. She doesn't get the minimum rookie contract.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
The Charlotte Hornets, LaMelo Ball had 30, 10, and 5. Kobe White gave him 19 off the bench. Miles Bridges gave him 28. Brandon Miller gave him 23. But here's an interesting one for you. Conker Nipple disappeared in this game. 2 of 12 from the field, 0 of 6 from 3, even though he's broken the rookie record for threes. Just 6 points. And the offense isn't the part that I'm unhappy about with Conker Nipple, because he's not known as a great defender, but he has a good basketball IQ, and he usually is in good positions defensively. He looked like a deer in headlights in this game. That's the part that worries me. And, you know, part of me just thinks, is his first taste of postseason basketball? Is that something the Hornets should be worried about going into the next one, or do you think he's learned his lesson from that and he's going
to
move on?
Well, whether he learned his lesson or not, they have nothing else to go by. I mean, you know, there's no alternative. I mean, you know, so the coach, Charles Lee, did the right thing by not having him in the game. He tried to put him in a few times at the end when they needed three-point shooters, but I thought he did a good job of getting him in and out. Yeah, it's just one of those first game that some players go through. A lot of pressure on a guy playing at home. It's similar to college. It's one and done. You're out. Mm-hmm. It's not a seven-game series. Guy's going to be fine. One and done. Tons of pressure. Tons of pressure. So unfortunate for the young man, but, you know, it's only going to get better from here. But he had a nightmare of a game. Absolute nightmare.
So the Sixers advanced after beating the Magic to play the Boston Celtics as the 2-7 matchup.
Yeah,
Philly fans chanting, "We want Boston." interesting choice. The final spot to take on the Detroit Pistons will be battled between the Orlando Magic and the Charlotte Hornets. And you like Orlando for this one.
If Wagner can play.
I think whether he plays or not, I'm going with the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, no, they've been the better. I think they've been the better team the second half of the year, obviously. And, you know, and so I think they're going to come down very determined and stuff like that. So, I mean, I would think they're going to be favored in the game, frankly. I really do. But a home court is home court.
Yeah. You know, I'm just hoping for that Hornets Pistons series. I think that would be absolutely.
I know that. That would be a great series.
I also think they deserve it, because Orlando's a team who should have been someone on ESPN, I think it was Kevin Pelton, who recently got a job in a front office. He had the Orlando Magic finishing number one in the East before the season began. They are in the play-in fighting for a spot to stay alive. I just think that the Charlotte Hornets
deserve. Where did Kevin Pelton get a front office job?
Let me Google that now. Houston Comets in the WNBA.
Yeah, the WNBA he got a job. Maybe that's why.
Yep. A job is a job nonetheless.
No, it's WNBA, so he predicted the men's league wrong. Okay, yeah. So
maybe his WNBA predictions are better. Hopefully. For Houston's sake, I hope they're a little bit better.
As an assistant GM in the WNBA.
Yeah, well, that's the play-in done. Let's talk a little bit about, because we promised everyone that we would do our end-of-season awards.
Okay.
So we're going to start right with the big one, the MVP for 2026, Coach. If you had a ballot, who would you be sending that in for?
You know, I it's funny. I talked to a few people tonight who I respect, and I had three people down there as my finalists.
Are you going to rank them 3-1?
SGA, I had Jokic, who I think was just fabulous, and Wimby. Those are my three. And two of the people that I called all said Wimby should be the MVP. They said, well, and their reasoning was they were tired of seeing SGA and Jokic getting the award they wanted spread around.
Well, I mean, SGA's only had it once, so,
no,
you know.
So I personally think SGA has just been absolutely incredible, as always. So I gave it to him, you know, frankly, slightly over Wimby.
Yeah, my logic for this award is usually, unless there's a major exception, the best player on the best team, which has been Shea on the OKC Thunder. Now, Wemby's been great, but he's played almost like how many more minutes less than Shea like 1,000 minutes. Like, obviously not 1,000, but I don't know how what the exact number is, but he's played a lot less minutes. There's no denial that Wemby's a superior defender. But what Shea has done in managing to maintain the one seed in a season where Jalen Williams has barely been available, half the rest of the roster has been in and out with injury, and he's been one of the most, if not the most, clutch players of the league, which is an award as well that they have, which he might get. I'm giving it to Shea for this season. But I can see the case for Wemby. I can also see the case for Jokic. However, when it comes to Jokic, I just think the team record, like the gap in a team record is just too big for me to give him the MVP this season.
Yeah. You know, so I went SGA, you know, but I think, you know, I think that's probably how the voting will end up. But I think really tough, really, really tough. I mean, you know, no matter how you go about it, it's going to be really difficult. You know, well, I think, you know, it's ironic. You know, Shea didn't play so many fourth quarters because they were blowing people out early in the year and, again, late in the year. But he still averaged 33 minutes a game. You know, and, you know, and only, I think, Maxey, I think, was the highest in the league at like 38 minutes a game. But, you know, but that was my rankings. Yeah.
He played 2,259 minutes this season, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, which is fantastic. Victor Wembanyama, 1,866. So there is quite a discrepancy there. You know, MVP is always tough to decide. One thing that I said in 2023 would not ever be tough to decide for the foreseeable future would be the Defensive Player of the Year award. And I don't think there's any discussion. It's Victor Wembanyama, and I think it will be that way. Well, here's the thing. Basketball Reference has him listed as playing 64 games.
No, he got his 65th on Sunday.
Well, they haven't updated. But yeah, Victor Wembanyama, Defense Player of the Year.
Yeah, and I think the only thing that will keep him from it will be injuries.
Yeah, like last season.
Yeah.
That's it. That's we'll say that way. Here's an interesting one for you, Coach Sir. Who is the Coach of the Year?
Yeah, boy. I had four finalists, in my opinion. I had J.B. Bickerstaff. I had Mitch Johnson from San Antonio, who's amazing first-year coach. Jordan Ott, Phoenix, first-year coach. And I had our friend Joe Mazzulla. And so, but I'm giving it to Joe Mazzulla, who did the most with the least expected this year with the tremendous injury. But a very, all four of those guys. Two of the friends I called had J.B. Bickerstaff until I said, over Joe Mazzulla? And they said, no, not over Joe Mazzulla.
J.B. Bickerstaff had a great season with Detroit. Great. Mitch Johnson had a great season with San Antonio. J.J. Redick, I think, as well, surprised a lot of people with the Lakers. And Jordan Ott surprised a lot of people with the Phoenix Suns. But right now, Joe Mazzulla is the best coach in the NBA. This isn't one of those years where someone's going to win Coach of the Year and we all say, well, we all know Eric Spoelstra is actually the best coach, but this guy can win it because he did something great this year. Joe Mazzulla is the best coach in the NBA. I'm saying that as my opinion, but I don't think right now you can make a case that any other coach is better than Joe Mazzulla. And do you know why? Because this is not coming down to the X's and O's or the after timeout plays. It's coming down to mentality, okay? Joe Mazzulla, being Psycho Joe, as they call him, has instilled his mentality on this group of players to the point where it's the final game of the season. The Orlando Magic are trying to secure the best seeding that they can to make the playoffs. And you put out your bench, okay? You're putting out guys that casual NBA fans have never heard of, and they still whoop the Orlando Magic.
Yeah.
This is, his DNA has permeated into every single player that puts on a Boston Celtics uniform. And so it doesn't matter who's out on the floor. It doesn't matter if Jason Tatum misses almost the whole season. It doesn't matter if Jaylen Brown is resting. It doesn't matter because every single player out there is going to go and play like their life depends on it. And I don't think any other team in the league can say the same thing.
I think we finally got to see his real personality this year come out. And it's hilarious, frankly. A lot of the things he does are absolutely hilarious. The guy's really got an amazing sense of humor and stuff like that. But he's tough as heck, and I love it about him. You know, so, I, you know, he's, to me, for you and I, it's unanimous vote. You know, mm-hmm. I you know, as good as all those people are, and there's others, he was hands down to me the guy.
Okay, here's an award which this year doesn't really seem to have a standout candidate, in my opinion.
I know.
Why are you laughing, Coach?
Executive of the Year.
No, that's not where I was going.
That's where I was. That was my next award, Coach of the Year, Executive of the Year.
Go on, talk to me. Executive of the Year. Let's stop there first.
Yeah, no, it's really hard. You know, a lot of people did a really good job, but sometimes you see moves that were made that were like, wow. And the moves that were made by this guy were so subtle, and they were kind of at the bottom of the roster, and they weren't with stars, and that's Brad Stevens.
It's absolutely agreed.
The organization that he has, the selection of Mazzulla as his coach, and they didn't panic when Tatum went down. They didn't pack it in. They didn't take a gap year. They went out and got Luke Garza. Who would ever think about doing that? But, you know, it turned out it was based on science. Do you know, all these teams, one of my sponsors on my Coaching You podcast is Noah Basketball. I don't know if you know what Noah does, but Noah is a shooting instrument. Every practice facility has one, and it measures the arc on the shot, and it also measures how many shots. Luke Garza is number one in the NBA in his shooting proficiency. And they went and, because every team has the ability to measure this. So everyone has the stats of every player in the league, what they're doing in practice. And that's how they picked this guy.
Wow.
He's a phenomenal
three-point shooter.
No.
Yeah. You know, the thing about Brad Stevens, they got Tatum's injury last season in the playoffs. They then cut an insane amount of salary, hundreds of millions of dollars of salary going off the books to get under the second apron.
300 plus million.
Yep. And then before the trade deadline, they cut more salary to get under the first apron.
Right.
And still here they are as the second seed and a lot of people's favorite to win the Eastern Conference.
And so Brad Stevens we give the award to, but there's
but also it's the whole front office.
Mike Zarin, who's mm-hmm. the salary cap genius there, is absolutely brilliant. He deserves a lot of credit.
We also have to show some love for Executives of the Year to our friends Scott Perry and BJ Armstrong for
absolutely
the steal of the draft. They took a guy in the second round. If you redraft that draft now, he's going top 10, and they got him out of second round
easily.
So
yeah,
Maxime a lot Reynaud, of people have a lot of things to say about the Kings, but yeah. Maxime Reynaud, Dylan Cardwell as well, and a very high pick in the upcoming draft. And Nick Clifford.
Nick Clifford's a solid player, you know. So, I mean, they've really done good. And, you know, they never had, like, Sabonis and Keenan Murray play
together. They do not have one game with a healthy roster this season. So, for all the excuses we make for the Orlando Magic, no one makes those same excuses. Anyway, enough of being slightly biased. The award that I originally wanted to talk about when I said there's no clear winner is the Sixth Man of the Year award.
Boy.
Because Peyton Pritchard started too many games to qualify for the Sixth Man of the Year.
Is that right?
I believe that's my understanding.
Okay.
So there's a lot of talk about this. A lot of people say Keldon Johnson from the Spurs. A lot of people say Jaime Jaquez from the Heat. And I'm like, why the hell are we giving Sixth Man of the Year to a guy on a 10 seed in the East? Like, that's ridiculous. Do you know who I would give Sixth Man of the Year to?
I bet we agree.
This is going to be interesting. Because I've not heard his name floated in any of these conversations.
Oh, okay.
I'm picking Dylan Harper. Who did you think I was going to go for?
The kid from the Atlanta Hawks, Nigel Alexander Walker.
Yeah?
That's who I picked.
How many games has he started this season?
I don't know that. I don't know that. You got all that stat stuff. I just got eyeballs, you know. Dylan Harper's really good, but I thought he was inconsistent.
Yeah, Nikhil started 71 of 78 games this season.
Okay, well, that knocks that out.
Good. He's out the window. But
how many games did Harper play?
Dylan Harper played 78 games.
Okay.
69 games. What am I talking about, 78 games? He played 69 games. He only started four of them. So he's played exactly 65 games off the bench. I've got no stats to back this other than when he comes off the bench, they don't miss a beat. He's an elite defender, and he's going to the hoop. He's amazing. Obviously, his three-point shot is not spectacular and prolific, but, you know, he's a kid that's just coming to the league.
No, his talents are off the charts. He's going to be a great, great player, you know. So I have no doubt about that. But my sixth man of the year, I wasn't locked into knowing. I didn't have the stats and stuff like, you know, you did. Yeah. So I really didn't know.
I think you're thinking of Nickeil Alexander because he is in the conversation for most improved player, which is probably why he's on your mind. The most improved player award, a lot of people have a lot of different candidates. Yeah. A lot of people say Jalen Duren. A lot of people say Nickeil Alexander Walker. Some people even say Denny Avdija. Listen, this era of picking lottery picks like Jalen Duren and saying they're the most improved, it can't go on. Okay, I sat here on this podcast with BJ Armstrong the year Jalen Duren was drafted. Runner-up for Executive of the Year. We sat here on this podcast, and he said to me that Jalen Duren will turn out to be the best player from that draft.
Wow.
And you can make a case he's had a better season than Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero, and Jabari Smith Jr., who were the top three picks from that draft.
There's no doubt in my mind. Yeah.
So why are we giving a guy most improved for simply living up to his potential? I've spoken about this before.
Yeah.
Most improved needs to be a guy that has come out of nowhere to shock the world. Now, I have two candidates in mind for this. The first candidate I believe to be Ryan Rollins, who played 74 games, even though the Milwaukee Bucks had a terrible season. Nobody expected this guy to average 17 points, 5 rebounds, and 6 assists this year. Not one person on earth. I don't think even the Milwaukee Bucks expected this. But my most improved player is Nemias Cater. Nemias Cater, who a couple seasons ago wasn't getting any run for the Sacramento Kings, goes over to Boston. Okay, they lose Horford. They lose Porzingis. They lose Luke Kornet. And everyone says, oh, the Celtics are going to be at the lottery. The Celtics maybe might make the play-in. You know, they've got no front court depth. And you talked about Luke Garza. But think about how good Nemias Cater has to be taking Luka Garza's minutes if Luka Garza's leading the league in the analytics of shooting.
I'll second that vote. I think he's been terrific. And I think your way you're evaluating this award is proper. You know, I think what we do sometimes is we say the most improved player could be a really terrific player. Almost. I had someone say the other day, well, Wimby should be.
Get out of here. This is my thing, coach.
The
most improved player award to me tells me who knows basketball and who doesn't.
Yeah.
Because when Tyrese Maxey won the most improved player, I was sat here like, are you guys all blind? We all know he was going to do this. Same with Nickeil Alexander Walker for most improved this year. We all knew that he was so good in the bench role he played for the Timberwolves last season. With a bigger role and more minutes, he can do exactly what he's done.
He just needed minutes.
That's exactly. So
and Trae Young got hurt. That's why he ended up starting so many games there. You know.
Yeah, traded. When we look at the winners of this award, when Ja Morant won it, I'm like, guys, how has he won this award? We all knew this was going to happen. I like the year when Lauri Markkanen won it because no one expected Lauri Markkanen to do what he did in that first season with the Utah Jazz. I like when Victor Oladipo won it and, you know, guys just appear and just start cooking. This is what the award is for. I'm giving it to Nemias Cater. He's jumped up from 13.9 minutes to 25. He's almost doubled his minutes played on a nightly basis.
Fabulous.
He went from starting 6 games. Last season, he started 6 games. The 4 seasons before that, he started 0 games to starting 75 games this season, putting up 10 points, 8 rebounds, and over a block and almost a steal a game, right? So the numbers aren't jumping off the page, but if you watch all the games, nobody, myself included, at the start of the season, thought that he would turn into a guy who, over the last 2 months, is a walking double-double.
Well, I think that's why we had the Celtics not being any good, because they lost Horford, they lost Luke Kornet. They had no center. And he went out, and basically, those are the two guys he got, you know. and boy, he really played great. I agree with that 100%. Good call.
I think those are some solid picks. Have we done everything? Oh, rookie of the year, coach. Rookie of the year. This is a two-horse race.
Yep, but to me, it's not even close.
It's not even close for me, and I'm intrigued to see if we go in the same direction here.
It's Cooper Flagg.
There we go.
It's not even close.
Yep.
The other kid is terrific, and he outperformed his expectations.
Yep.
Khan outperformed. He was terrific. When he was the fourth pick, I thought it was a stretch. I didn't think he was, but they saw what they needed and everything. They knew what they were getting, and he performed beautifully. The last 10 games, he's had a nightmare, and Cooper went through the roof in the last 10 games. Not that Cooper Flagg did stuff that had never been done by a teenager before, 50-point game, 40-point games, most games 30 points and above. The guy is the real deal. He should have been on our Olympic team. That's how good he is.
Yep. I mean, he was frying them in practice. Like, here's my thing with this award.
He should have been on the All-Star. If he wasn't hurt, he should have been on the All-Star team this year.
Here's my thing with this award, right? People are like, oh, I'm voting for Colin Knipl because of team success. My friend, they're the ninth seed in the East. What team success are we talking about? Like, they've had a great season by the standards of the Charlotte Hornets. They've not had an all-time great season. Like, give me a break with that. If Cooper Flagg was on the Hornets, I promise you they would have finished higher than ninth. I promise you.
Yeah, no.
And if Colin Knipl was on the Mavs, they would probably have won less games than they did with Cooper Flagg.
Cooper Flagg is the real deal. He's a generational player. I told several of our friends, not to be named, that this guy is the real deal. I said, this white boy can play.
Real, hey coach.
He's really good, boy. And on top of it, he's a great kid. I mean, he's really great, humble, the whole deal. It's nice to see that, and he lived up to expectations. On a tough situation with a lot of injuries and turmoil going on there, he played through it all.
Yeah. Is that all of the awards? Have we got any that we've missed out?
Let's see. No, I think there's one, the clutch player, which I don't know really that
I'm
much.
I'm picking Shea. Yet,
but you know, you have Shea, I have Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
You know, I think this guy deserves an award, man. This guy, you know, he's on my first team All-Pro and all that stuff. But this guy, he was extraordinary. And I trust him down the stretch against anyone. You know, all the guys that are, you know, that are first team All-Pro for the most part every year. You know, whether it be Luka, LeBron, they're all clutch. You know what I mean? Jalen Brunson's won it, you know. But this guy, I think he deserves so much credit because it's one thing when you're playing on the Celtics team from the last couple of years. But he was started out, man, it was the junior varsity, okay, we call it. You know, it was a G League plus team. No offense to those guys, you know. And they just excelled. And we kept saying, God, this team might be 500. Then next thing you know, they just took off. I give him a lot of credit, and he deserves something.
They have teammate of the year. Steph Curry won last year. I'll give that to Jaylen Brown. But he has his eyes firmly on the Larry Obi. They also have the NBA Hustle Award. That's an interesting one. Draymond Green won it last year. I'd give that to maybe someone like Oscar Thompson or Colin Gillespie. He could also be in the running for most improved. There's a lot of guys out there who've been hustling hard. We will save all NBA teams for another day because it's almost 7 a.m. for me. I need to go to sleep. But coach, excited for the play-in and the playoffs to begin. We'll be back nice and early when we can do another episode, look at the entire playoff picture, and we will predict the entire bracket for you. So until then, if you don't yet have NBA 2K26, make sure you go get that.
Absolutely.
So you can fill the time in between playoff games. And until next time, my good people, much like old Uncle Al Horford in the fourth quarter tonight, get buckets.